Hey, what's up? It's Frick. The thing you're going to hear next is a story I originally told you in 2009, and I thought it was a good follow-up to the first DeMay story. I hope you like hearing it again. I was 18 years old. We were in Florida. We were each sitting on a washing machine in this laundry room in a motel where we were staying, we were living, and we were attending Clown College. I don't know how we got started in conversation. I can hardly remember a word of it, but sometimes you just meet someone who you can talk to. And we talked for many years. I have to say that in many ways he made me who I am. Or I guess really the way to put that is that he helped me see who I am. And he helped me see everything differently. It's not that it was always easy. I mean, to be honest, we both disliked a lot of things about each other. And he always knew when I was lying. Ironically, around the time that I started hanging around with him, I became very intolerant to liars, cheats, and thieves. Let me amend that by saying that I have no tolerance for people other than myself lying, cheating, or stealing. And when Doug learned that the circus was full of liars, cheats, and thieves, he took his belongings and put them in his clown trunk and put it on a skateboard and wheeled it out of Madison Square Garden in Midtown Manhattan, said his goodbyes, and got on the subway, and he went downtown to live with a friend of ours who we knew in Clown College named Smiley Sam. Shortly after that, he moved into an abandoned building in the East Village and squatted there for a while, maybe months or a year, and then finally moved to Indonesia to study shadow puppets for a better part of a year before he returned to the United States. And it was around that time that I left the circus because it was full of liars, cheats, and thieves. And that's, you know, when we became friends again. He wound up in New York, and I wound up in Boston, which is, you know, just a 4-hour bus ride. So we continued to be friends. There was a sort of turning point with Doug, which in my mind actually really started on this one day during a visit to New York to see him. I left his house, and his girlfriend at the time, I just can't remember her name. Well, of course, we had a nickname for her. I hate that. I hate that I can't remember her name. Because, I mean, she was, of all the people that I met through him, she was the one who most sincerely and truly, genuinely cared about him. And, actually, that day when I was leaving his apartment to go back to get on the bus, she said, "Oh, I got to go across town too. I'll walk with you." And we left him there, and out on the sidewalk, you know, I don't know. We made a little small talk for a minute, and she said, "I'm worried about him right now." And I couldn't hear that. I mean, I couldn't. I looked up to him so much. I didn't know how to talk to her about that. I mean, I think that anybody who knew him at the time, maybe somewhere in the back of your head, you always wondered if there was something wrong. If he was unhappy or if he was unwell. But for me, I just really, I couldn't. He was so much like me that I couldn't even think about that, really. And I couldn't talk about it with her, that's for sure. And I think I pretty much just said, "Ah, he's fine. he'll be okay. And she said, well, you know how he kind of gets depressed? And I think I did know. I don't know. I totally blew it off, and I'm sure it never changed anything for him. I just wished for her sake that I'd said to her, yeah, I know how you feel. You know. It wasn't long after that that he went missing, and it wasn't long after that that he turned up in the middle of the winter, basically with no clothes, in a phone booth somewhere in Connecticut, and he just lost his mind and wandered away. Like, he just, he stopped eating, and, man, something happened. Just something happened, and he said some weird things to people we knew, and then he just disappeared, and I don't know, it was the police who found him. I don't know exactly what went down. I just know that it wasn't too long after that that they shipped him down to Florida, where his mother lived, and you know, he was in the psych ward at a hospital after that. And you know, first you thought, oh, it's gonna be it's gonna be a matter of days and he'll be better and they'll get him out of there. They'll figure out what's wrong with him and they'll take care of it. And then you thought, oh, it's going to be a few weeks. And then you kind of thought, well, you know, maybe it takes someone a year to get out of something like this. And it did. I mean, it really took a while before he was kind of ready to go back out into the world on his own. And at that point, he went up to New York again to live with his girlfriend. You know, and she was going to help him get back on his feet. And I'm sure I believed in him that he could do that. But I remember that years later, he moved to Boston at one point, and he lived with me for a couple of months in one place. And it was just a matter of time before he saw everyone that we lived with as being very flawed and having no integrity. You know, he was always at odds with the world wherever he went. At one point later, I moved to Hollywood to be rich and famous, and he moved to Hollywood to be poor and obscure. And then finally, you know, when he left Hollywood, he just threw everything in a storage locker and left. Eventually, I left LA and I went back to the circus. And the last time I saw him, he was just stopping by to see me in the circus one last time. And it was kind of weird where I knew I went back there, you know. It didn't matter if they were liars, cheats, and thieves. Not enough that I wouldn't go back anyways. He stopped by for a visit. Briefly, one night for a couple hours. He had a dog he was taking care of. I guess that was the only person he could really be friends with was a dog. He was going to be a hermit up in Pennsylvania. And I haven't seen him since. I think that was 4 years ago. I doubt very much I'll ever see him again. I think I'm just on the other side of the line. But the moment that really stays with me is after he'd gotten out of the hospital that first time and he'd gone back to New York to live with his girlfriend, there's this thing that happened one day. He just lived in her apartment. He hardly ever went outside. I think it was a matter of him just making it through the day. No one was thinking he'd like go out and get a job or could really deal with the crowds or the, you know, the pressures of life, but he basically stayed in her apartment. And she would just go leave early in the morning to go teach school. And then she'd be back in the afternoon. She'd spend the afternoon with him. This was every day, you know. And a good day was a day where he just made it through without any kind of a major panic attack or major emotional meltdown. She'd come home this one day and he was just flopped down on the bed behind her. And she was just looking into the mirror letting her hair down, washing her face, and just kind of like talking about the ride home on the subway and what had happened. And she asked him, who would you rather live with, a liar or a thief? And he didn't say anything, you know, and she turned around and looked at him and she realized that he was unconscious. And he didn't look right. She looked down at the sink and could see all these empty pill bottles and empty lids of pill bottles on the floor and spilled pills everywhere. And she just dialed 911. There was a long night. The hospital, her sleeping in a chair in his room. And then in the morning, she was sitting there in the chair looking at him when he just opened his eyes and he kind of looked around and he looked over at her and he said, neither. Hey, thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Frickin' Circus. You can email me, frick@frickincircus.com. Peace out, sauerkraut.